we left off in the previous year, really one last point, just in terms of categories of Torah Shabbat, and then for the bulk of today's year, I really want to move on to a different aspect of Torah Shabbat. So we mentioned the category of Minhagim. We mentioned that in addition to Dinim Deraisa, to Dinim Derabanan, there is a new halacha category called Minhagim, which is really the fifth of the Rambam's categories, Torah Shabbat Pen, we start with Halacha Moshim Sinai, Peh Shemakumi Sinai, Drashas, Derabanans. Now we enter the realm of Minhagim. So we said that Minhagim that we are speaking about, at least the Minhagim which are instituted by the Beis and Agadol, Minhagim which are relevant, which are binding upon all of Klal Yisrael. Subsequent to the conclusion of the Gemara, there were communal minhagim that were binding upon those communities that had such minhagim. In addition to the idea of communal minhagim and Klal Yisrael oriented minhagim, minhagim play another role in halacha in terms of private minhagim that a person can accept upon themselves, a private custom. The Gemara speaks about a family custom, so if a person either has a private custom, a family custom, one is also observe that as well. This is all assuming that the minhagim are minhagim which are positive, which are beneficial minhagim. The Mefarshim points out that there are different types of minhagim in the world of Torah Shabbat Peh. There are good minhagim, there are neutral minhagim, there are bad minhagim. Pretty much the world is broken into those three categories. So the good minhagim are the minhagim that enhance Avodas Hashem, the minhagim like some that we mentioned before, like the not eating of kidney yolks, which enhances the Isur Mechametz, make sure the person doesn't violate Isur Mechametz. Again, not buying at all price, but with those communities that accepted it. Then you have family minhagim and private minhagim, which are also positive, good things. The Gemara gives an example, Masechet Pesachim, there's a certain family that they were makabel, they accepted upon themselves not to travel on Fridays. As we all know, anyone who's traveled late and tried to be stuck on the highway somewhere knows where that's a positive, good minhag. So again, you have different types of minhagim that are positive, that enhance the Hashem.
What about minhagim that don't really make so much
sense? Oh, that's what we get to in a second. So then you have other kind of minhagim which don't really seem to enhance anything, which, it's a minhag. That's my father did, it's my minhag. So those types of minhagim you have to be careful with. So just because it doesn't make any sense to you doesn't mean that it doesn't.
What if it makes more,
right, so that's what the Tam categorizes. There's a third kind of a minhag, that there are neutral minhagim, but then there are some minhagim which are bad minhagim. Now, I wouldn't be quick to judge a minhag as being a negative, detrimental minhag. I'd have to bring it to a rav or a posek and to analyze it. Maybe more to the minhag than meets the eye. But the Tam says that the letters minhag are the same letters, and if you flip them around, it's Gehenna. So we think Mem, Nun, Hey, Gimel. So when you switch them around, it spells out Gehenna. So the Tam said that sometimes you can have minhagim that are really bad. It means it's a terrible minhag. What do you keep it? It's a minhag that the minhag is that we fight with each other. It's not a minhag. It's not a minhag. It's a terrible minhag. So the word minhag shouldn't be misunderstood or misapplied to mean anything that we use, anything that people do, all of a sudden becomes a minhag. That's not necessarily the case. So again, so we've really completed at least the overview of the different categories of the Torah Shabbat Peh with the different ramifications in terms of a change and in terms of machlokas and kind of a somewhat of an overview in terms of at least a breakdown of different types of Torah Shabbat Peh. What I want to move on to really in the next part of our discussion is somewhat more of a historic background, but again, it's going to be a historic slash halachic slash hashkafic. As to really going through the years, starting from the beginning, starting from Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai, just a little bit of an overview historically as to how Torah Shabbat Peh played out. What Torah Shabbat Peh was like in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, how it worked through the days of Ba'is Rishon, into the period of Ba'is Sheni, the period of Mishnah, Gemara, Rishon, Mechuron, really until today. So I think this is the next real bulk of our topic. It'll take up a couple of times just to get a little bit of an overview historically. So of course we know where Torah Shabbat Peh started. It's not the same place Torah Shabbat Stav started. That's the first mission for Yavos, the Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai. We already pointed out, in I think it was the first or second shiur, that the notion of Torah Shabbat Peh was really alive and well in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of all the different levels of Torah Shabbat Peh. All five halachim of Torah Shabbat Peh existed already in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu in the following sense. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Eruvin, the Gemara describes what the Seder Limud was in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. That Moshe Rabbeinu would receive a mitzvah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then he would gather, first he would teach over that mitzvah to Aaron and his sons, then he would teach it to the Zakenim, then teach it to the Klal Yisrael. The Gemara gives a whole Seder Advarim as to how Moshe Rabbeinu presented each of the mitzvahs. So the Rambam in his Akdamot to Perashat Mishnayos, which we've quoted already many times this year, the Rambam describes this in the following, gives you a mashal. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu
came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to give you a new mitzvah. And the new mitzvah, they're going to give you the parasha sukkah. That's the example the Rambam gives. He could have given any other mitzvah. He gives the mitzvah of sukkah. And as Baruch Hu gives the Torah Shemichsav to Moshe Rabbeinu, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, V'yedav Hashem Moshalema v'chamisha asa yoyim l'chodesh ha-shvi hazeh, chag ha-sukkah shemizyam l'Hashem, ha-sukkah stesha shemizyamim, etc. He gives him all the details of the Torah Shemichsav, verbatim, letter by letter, word by word, the mitzvah of sukkah, the parish of sukkah, and Moshe Rabbeinu writes it down. That was the Torah Shemichsav. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, now we're going to open up our Gemaras. Now we're going to discuss, I'm going to explain to you what's going on, what sukkah is all about. So first I have to explain to you, what's a sukkah? I have to explain what the words mean. A sukkah means with walls, with schach, what do the walls have, how do the walls have to be made, what are the dimensions of the walls? I'm going to explain that to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu. What does the schach have to be made of? So I'm going to explain that to you. Who has to sit in the sukkah? I'm going to explain to you. When do you have to sit in the sukkah? On the first night, the subsequent nights, when it's raining, when it's not raining, when you're sick, when you're not sick. All the details, all the tush about that. Some of them, halacha l'moshe b'sinais, some of them, perushim ha-mekubalim b'sinais. It was all nimsa to Moshe Rabbeinu, mamash at the beginning, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, pe'el-peh, mitzvah by mitzvah. And then, as the Gemara Erevin says, we quoted before, Moshe Rabbeinu gathered Klal Yisrael and taught them to Klal Yisrael what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said. He read out to them the Pesukim Mitoch HaChsav, Mitoch HaChumish from the Sefer Torah, the Pesukim of the Tosh HaChsav, and then he explained to Moshe Rabbeinu explained to Klal Yisrael, okay, what does it mean to have a sukkah? And what did Allah Moshe Messina as a sukkah? What did the Perushim Mekubal Messina at sukkah, etc.? Then the people went, and they listened to what Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, and they chazed it, they reviewed it, they discussed it amongst themselves, and they started to think about it a little bit, and started to ask questions about it, and started to see, well, what's the halacha? What do you do? What if a new shaila comes up? What if Moshe didn't say this? Or what would Moshe have said if he would have known about the shaila, back and forth? Now, the advantage of the Dor HaMidbar was that they had Moshe Rabbeinu to ask. So any shaila, any suffix that they had, they could re-ask the question to Moshe and get the psach of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's the fact that the Gemara says that right before Moshe Rabbeinu died, so we gather all the Klal Yisrael together and they said, any shailas that you have, so ask now, because he's going to die soon, so I'll answer all your shailas now. So whatever shailas were asked were answered by Moshe Rabbeinu, and that was the Torah Shebichsav, at least in terms of the Halacha of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Perushim HaKubal, the Drashas in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu also made the Klal Chachamim. Not only was Moshe the Mekabelas HaTorah of the Bi'ah Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu was the head of the Beis Din also. He was the Rosh Sanhedrin. He had the Beis Din of 71. And then Moshe and his Beis Din instituted certain takanos as well, certain dinim derabanan. Anyone know some examples of some of the takanos of Moshe Rabbeinu? Some very, very old takanos of Moshe Rabbeinu. Anybody know? Moshe Tikilam Yisrael. Kriyas HaTorah was instituted, began by Moshe Rabbeinu and his Beis Din. Huh? So the Gemara says that Ezra elaborated upon Takan. Ezra enhanced the Takan a little bit, but the original Takan was made by Moshe. The fact that one is supposed to elain the Kriyas HaTorah of the Yom Tif on the Yom Tif, that was also part of Moshe Rabbeinu's Takan. Anyone knows what else? Any other Takanas? Moshe Tikkun Lam Yisrael Shibisimei HaMishta, the institution of Sheva Brachas, the institution of celebrating for a week after getting married was the Takkun of Moshe Rabbeinu. Shibisimei HaVeilus, the idea of sitting Shiva was instituted by Moshe Rabbeinu. These were not Dinim D'Raisa, these are Dinim D'Rabbanan. Just because Moshe said it doesn't make it a Din D'Raisa. When Moshe speaks in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a Din D'Raisa. When Moshe speaks as a Chacham, as a Rav, that's a Din D'Rabbanan, no different than any other Takkun. So a Takkun that was made by Rav Ashi is no more or less binding than a takana made by Moshe. When Moshe tells you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me this and this, so that's a din d'oraisa. When Moshe says that I'm telling you this and this, I'm making it up, I'm telling you to have Shiva and Shiva Zimra Mishnah, etc., that's only the d'rabbanan. So the whole gamut of Tosheva Peh was alive and well in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. The fundamental difference of the days of Moshe and contrast to today is that there was a final address in terms of how to pass in the Shaila. He went to Moshe and Moshe Rabbeinu decided and told him what the halacha should be.
I was just thinking that if you're telling me that sitting Shiva is there a button, there's no like anything against this, right? So that I said that.
Is there one?
Right,
so according to, there is a machlokes that we shown him when the Gemara says that Moshe tikkun himself shivisi me'avelos, what exactly does that mean? So most of the many we shall tell them, the Rosh interpret that to mean that the whole institution of avelos was midirabbanan. Midiraisa, there's no such thing as avelos at all. And the Rambam, the Rif and the Rambam have a different understanding. They assume that the first day of Shiva is deraisa, the subsequent days are on a midirabbanan. It means the idea of observing a whole week of Shiva is on a midirabbanan, but the first day is in fact Nidaraisa. So that would be the answer if you don't to your question. So again, to get back to the story. So Moshe was Masakein, the Dinim Deraisa that he gave us, and the Dinim Derabana that he instituted for us. And this all came to an end with the death of Moshe. Moshe dies, and now what happens? So Yeshua ben Nun takes over. He had smicha. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, what that means. He was given the authority. Passed over the authority. Moshe can return to see Messiah Yeshua. Yeshua takes over. So now, anything that Moshe had taught as Allah Moshe Sinai, so Yeshua had heard it from him, and he continues to teach the Klal Yisrael. Any shayla that comes up in terms of Perish of Akubi Sinai is handed down once again to the next generation. Now a new shayla comes up. The question becomes, how to darshan a puzzle? Should we darshan this S, should we not darshan this S? Should we learn this Kama Chom, or should we not learn this Kama Chom? Now what happens? So Yeshua wasn't the only Talmid Chacham. Pinchas was around then, there's a Kenum around then, a lot of people around then. So what's going on now, guys? So what happens? Machlokes. So one says one thing, one says something else, one says something else. Kaval, we got major machlokes, right? Unless. Unless what? Right, but one thing you get a follow-up side. Or what if everybody pretty much sees eye to eye with each other? What if everybody, you know, if you had 100 people who really think the same, they would probably come to the same conclusion. So in the days of Yeshua, we don't know how many machlokesim there really were. What we do know is that there was a mechanism how to resolve the machlokes fairly quickly. What was the mechanism? You go to the Beis HaGadol, right? 71 Dayanim, you take a vote, and whatever the Beis HaGadol says, Supreme Court, Abdul, that's it, end of discussion. Unless it's reconvened another Beis Din in a subsequent generation to reassess the question. So there may have been machlokes, and it could be that an issue raised, the same way we said there was machlokes Moshe and Aaron, even in the days of the Chumash itself, and the machlokes was ultimately resolved. So in the days of Yeshua, any issue that came up would just go to Beis HaGadol and finish. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Mavakam, in the seventh perk, that Yeshua also instituted many takanos that were instituted in the days of Yeshua, again, which were derabbanan, not dinim deraisa. The Gemara tells us in Mavakam that there are many takanos that Yeshua made in the realm of Dinei Mamonos, where they entered into Eretz Yisrael, just to make life easy for everybody. The Gemara says that in certain seasons of the year, you're permitted to walk on other people's property, if it's not going to ruin the crops, so just to make life easier for people. The Gemara gives a whole bunch of other different things that Yeshua instituted just to monetarily make things run smoothly. So things are continuing in terms of the Mesorah pretty much the same in the days of Yeshua, except there was, of course, they didn't have access to Moshe Rabbeinu anymore, but Moshe Kibbutar, Misi Mesorah of Yeshua. And this was continuing on from the days of Yeshua. Yeshua was a Kain, this came with a Nevi'im. Each of the Nevi'im, you know, we're familiar with the Nevi'im. Sometimes when we think of the Nevi'im, so we think of these people who are out there just saying Nevu'ah, giving advice on Musa, and we think of people who are running to wars and all kind of, which were true. I mean, Shmuel and Avi was doing a lot of interesting things, and Yishayahu and Yirmiyahu, they were doing a lot of things, but we sometimes tend to forget that the other role of a Navi, that a Navi was also a Chacham, that a Navi was... some generations had more than one major Navi, but the Nevi'im who we're familiar with from the Kitzvei Kodesh, from the Sefer Nevi'im, they were the Gedolei HaTorah. Rambam lists off in his Hakdamah of Perush Mishnayos and his Hakdamah of Mishnah Torah, actually the order of the transmission of the tradition that who Yeshua handed over to and which Navi handed to this Navi and that Navi to that Navi and that Navi to that Navi, etc. until the days of the Sofa Nevi'im, which was going to lead us to the period of the beginning of the Mishnah. So pretty much Tarshish Ba'Peh was pretty much functioning in the same way for the first almost 1,000 years of our tradition, in the sense of that there were halacha lashon mesinas and perushim kabbalah mesinas that were kept intact, transmitted generation to generation. Every once in a while, new shaila came up, like the Amoni Lo-Amonis, and the Moabis that we spoke about in the days of Rus. The Gemara even records in Sanhedrin Machlokas that took place in the days of Shaul and David, and different types of shailas. There were dinim derabbanan that were constantly being added to along the years. We mentioned, remember some we spoke about? What was some of the dinim derabbanan from the period of Ayis Rishon, remembers? And remember? The Gemara speaks about the Tekhar of Shlomo, Shlomo Melech instituted Erevin, right? And the Shlomo Melech instituted the Tilis Yadayim. So David instituted certain aspects of the Halachas of Yichud. Then the Gemara speaks about certain Tekhanas that were made in a little bit later on during the period of Bayis Rishon. So throughout the period of Bayis Rishon, pretty much things were following the same path that they had since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu.
You said that the Arabs, like Amar's, everything, like, what to do?
I would say that there were definitely Amei Haaretz who didn't know what to do, and there were definitely people who didn't know what to do. You know, sometimes we have this romantic idea that in previous generations everyone was mamish the greatest Talmid Chacham in the world. So the Talmid Chachamim of previous generations were clearly on a higher level in terms of their understanding of Torah. There is Yeridus Adaras, but there were many Amaratzim in previous generations also. So we shouldn't, you know, think there weren't periods of Amaratzim. There were other times in Jewish history where the level of knowledge was much higher. The Gemara actually praises the generation of Chizkiyo Melech. As Rabbi Wah was speaking before, Chizkiyo was right before Menashe. But in the period of Chizkiyo, the Gemara says that both from Dan and Beersheba, means they checked out throughout the entire Jewish community from the north to the south, and they realized that every man, woman, and child was a Bochi no Chastuma V'tara. It means Chastuma V'tara, let's not forget, in those days that was like knowing Kashrus today, because everyone had to keep Chastuma V'tara. So there were different times when there were greater levels of knowledge, and at times there are lesser levels of knowledge. So all of this was going on during Bayis Rishon. Again, there were different historical events going on. There was a binyan Bayis Rishon, and there were times, and there were good times and bad times during Bayis Rishon. But pretty much in terms of the Maseiros HaTorah, so it was pretty. Things were pretty much on tar, you know, on track as was going on for the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. There was a major change, a few major changes that took place historically at the period of the end of Bayis Rishon. So one major change was, geographically, the Jewish people for the most part were sent to Chutz La'aretz. It was a temporary goal, so it was a fairly short kolos. And so there was a Jewish community that came back to Eretz Yisrael a short time later. There were always Jews in Eretz Yisrael, but the hub had moved to Bavel for several generations. And even at the beginning of Bayis Sheni, when Jews began to come back, a very small percentage of Jews came back, 40,000 altogether. Most of the Jews did in fact remain in Golos. So you had an important change in terms of that, whereas Eretz Yisrael had been really the center scene of everything, particularly in terms of learning Torah, so that began to change, at least to some degree, at the end of the period of Bayis Rishon. Another major change that took place shortly after Bayis Rishon was the end of Nevuah. Now, Nevuah per se didn't impact on Teresh about Peh, because we mentioned before that the role of the Navi and the role of the Chacham are very different from one another. But the Navi does not paskin shailos. The Navi is not involved as a posek. A Navi can also be a posek. Shmuel could be a posek, and Yirmiyahu could be a posek, just as Yeshua could be a posek. But a Navi doesn't paskin shailos b'koach hanevuah. But nevertheless, clearly, if there was a Yiridus Adoros to the point that the generations had slacked off to the point where Bayis Sheni wasn't up to par with Bayis Rishon, the Gemara says that there was the Shekhinah wasn't there in its fullest sense, the fullest, as it was in the days of Bayis Rishon, Urim Tumim weren't functioning in Bayis Sheni, the Nevuah wasn't present in Bayis Sheni, a lot of things weren't present in Bayis Sheni. So one can already begin to sense that there was definitely a less of a, of Ashras HaShekhinah in Bayis Sheni, but nevertheless, Liman of Torah did continue. There's no question that Torah Shabbat Peh did continue, and some of the names of people who are very, very familiar to us begin to appear in the days of Bayis Sheni. the Mishnah in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, so when it speaks about the early days of Torah Sheba Peh, namely the period of Bais Rishon, there are really no names that are given to us. Moshe Gibbethon Messinim, so the Yeshua, Shul's Canaan, Canaan Levium. The Mishnah doesn't spell out who this Canaan was, the Mishnah doesn't spell out who the Nevi'im were. We could figure out who the Nevi'im were, but we know Shmuel Hanavi must have been a major player in Torah Sheba Peh. We know the Yeshayo Hanavi must have been a major player. They were the leaders of the Jewish people, so they no doubt were involved in the Masorah of Teshuvah of them. But Chazal don't single out any particular names in that Mishnah. The first name we have mentioned in the Mishnah as an individual is Shimon HaTzadik. That's why, in a certain sense, Shimon HaTzadik is really the first Tana. But the word Tana is usually reserved for someone in the Mishnah period, someone who writes, someone who appears in the Mishnah or Brisa, Sefer. Again, we'll talk about hopefully these different breakdowns of that period of time, who what precisely they are. But the term, the official historical term Tana, refers to an individual mentioned in the Mishnah. So basically, the first Tana, for lack of anyone before him mentioned by name, is really Shimon HaTzadik. So Shimon HaTzadik was a very famous historical figure. The Gemara has a very famous story of Maseches Yuma about the encounter between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. Those who remember the story, that Alexander the Great was conquering the world. That's what it was called. Alexander the Great, and he tried to conquer Eretz Yisrael also, and then and they sent the delegation to greet him, and Shimon HaTzadik as the Kohen Gadol, so he led the delegation. He was the head of the Beis Din as well as the Kohen Gadol, and when he met Alexander bows down in front of him, and the Gemara explains the story that Alexander tells the soldiers that every night before he would go out to battle, so an angel would appear to him telling him he's going to be successful. The angel looked like Shimon HaTzadik, so he says he saw on the face of Shimon HaTzadik that he's not just like a regular person, he's like Mamash from the Malachi Ashores. So he bows down to Shimon HaTzadik. Then the Gemara says that he was very good to the Jews, and in fact after the name Alexander entered into the Jewish family names, so people decide to name their kids after him, and so be it. All the Alexanders or the Descenders or the Alexes or any other those types of names that we have today are all from descendants of those original Chevra of who were appreciative to Alexander the Great. Anyway, to get back to the story, so this was in the middle of Bayisheni. But we now have names, people we can actually pin names on. Then the Mishnah continues the meeting for Yehovah's and tells us about Chatinus Ksocho, who was a Talmud of Shimon HaTzadik, and then we start to get into trouble in Klai. So as we mentioned, it was at this period of time where there was a tremendous break, where the first really breakaway from Judaism in terms of being Kofer and Torah Sheba Peh enters onto the scene. The Tzedukim and the Bitzusim, again, who reappear in history in different guises as the Karoim of the Middle Ages, and then other denominations in Judaism more closer to modern history, but the original break in the terms of Torah Sheba Peh are that group of the Tzedukim and the Bitzusim. It's at this time when the Mishnah highlights at the beginning of Pirkei Avos the Nesiim and the Rashi and the Beis Din, that each Sanhedrin had two major leaders to it. There was the Nasi Sanhedrin and there was the Av Beis Din, and each of those people are mentioned in the Pirkei Avos: Yossi ben Yoezi, Yossi ben Yochanan, Nita Beili, Tava, Yeshua ben Shetach, Yeshua ben Prachia, etc. All the different people are mentioned. The early Tanoim, again, we don't know very much about them in terms of actual halachas. There are very few halachas that we know in the name of Nida Har Beili, very, very few things in halacha that we know from Yehuda ben Tavai. There are a few things here and there that we do know from Shimon ben Shetach. One of them is the sugya in Maseches Machas about Im Zomerman. There's a famous story that has a Maseches Sanhedrin or Shabbat Shimon ben Shetach with Im Zomerman in there. So we have a half dozen traditions, which can be linked to a specific name. But those early Tanoim that I mentioned in the Mishnah, so we don't know all that much, as individual statements of theirs. But we know that they were really leading the Jewish community spiritually at this time. So here, just historically, we're talking about the period of mid Bayis Sheni. This is the time the Nes of Chanukah took place at this time, and the Jewish people were having a lot of issues. There were a lot of political issues, a lot of spiritual, a lot of religious issues that were taking place at this time. That politically, the Jewish community was not in as good shape as it was during Bayis Rishon, in the sense of that they really were not independent. That the bulk of Bayis Sheni, they were under foreign rule, first under the foreign rule of the Persians, then under the foreign rules of the Greeks. and then a little bit later on under the final rule of the Romans, it was a very relatively short time that there was actually a Jewish kingdom in the Eretz Yisrael during Bais Sheni under the Chashmonaim, which also ended in a very tragic way. We'll get to it in a minute, but politically, things situation was not always so great. Obviously, when you're under foreign rule, so then you're subject to the whims of your foreign rulers as well. So there were ups and downs politically. In terms of spiritually, also there were a lot of ups and downs. There were a lot of problems already in the Jewish community spiritually. There were problems of the Tzedukim who were making inroads. There were problems of the Misyavnim, of those individuals who were influenced by Greek culture. Greek culture was the dominant secular world all around them. And Greek culture had taken over basically all of Greek culture is pretty much the foundations of Western civilization, the civilization that we live in, that we grew up in. And that had taken over in Eretz Israel as well. Now, although there are certain parts of Western civilization that we live in which are very positive, as we all know, there are certain parts of Western civilization that are not so positive. And there were parts of Greek culture that were not so positive either. We know this from the background of the Chanukah story. There were certain emphasis upon the body that was above and beyond being appropriate. And we know whenever the body is overemphasized and idolized, that sometimes carries with it morality, and these were problems that were beginning to seep into the Jewish community. So there were issues that during Bais Sheni. Not everything was hunky-dory during Bais Sheni, but notwithstanding that, the Torah Rabbeinu was still very strong. The Mesorah was strong, and Chazal described that there was a tremendous renaissance in terms of Limud HaTorah during the period of Bais Sheni. So although there were dangers already lurking, there were already political issues and spiritual issues that were potentially going to cause serious problems in years to come, in terms of the Torah Rabbeinu, there was a significant amount of learning taking place during the period of Bais Sheni. We then enter into a period in Bais Sheni also, where the Gemara begins to discuss the notion of machlokas, how the first machlokas, the first unresolved machlokas that took place in Klal Yisrael, and anyone knows what that is? The first unresolved machlokas. Sugim says Chagiga, anybody know Chagiga? Remember? No. Moshe Aaron was resolved. Machlokas that lasted for generations. It was a very, very technical machlokas about when you offer a carbon on Yom Tov, are you supposed to lean on the animal or not? Normally, when you offer a carbon, you're supposed to lean on the animal. On Yom Tov, you're usually not supposed to lean on animals, you're not supposed to ride on animals. So the question is, do you do smichas? Smichas are carbonas on Yom Tov. Very, very technical machlokas. So the Gemara says that this was an unresolved machlokas for generations, that about five generations, they couldn't get a psak beis, they couldn't convene the Sanhedrin to get it to resolve the answer to this question. The Gemara says it's the first major machlokas unresolved in the history of Klal Yisrael. It's interesting when you think about this machlokas, so it really drives home a point that a lot of people make a mistake. And many, many people think, and you ever ask them, may I ask you, are there more halachas that are agreed upon or disagreed upon? What would you say? I think there are more things that are machlokas or more things that are not machlokas. What would you say? You think there are more machlokas? Who thinks there are more machlokas? It's machlokas. Who thinks there are less machlokas? I think there are less machlokas. I'll tell you what. In learning, we always focus on the machlokas because that's where the excitement is. That's where you can see Torah. That you can say, oh, this one holds this and you hold this. Let's take a sugya for example. Let's give you a machlokas. What are you guys up for in the office already? You guys are the hey and the bays, what's going on? Different chairs. Different things. So give me something that everybody knows. Everyone knows Katie and Nas and Dolman?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, give me a machlokas. Any machlokas there? No machlokas. The bays. No machlokas. All the bays. Give me the first machlokas, guys, in the above. You guys are the hey. All right, forget machlokas. Give me machlokas. Give me another masakta. Give me any machlokas at Tanoim. You name it. You pick them up like that tonight.
When do you say Krishna?
Good, Krishna, okay. Good. So when's the earliest time to say Krishna? The latest time to say Krishna? What should we start with? The first mission of Shas. When's the latest time to say Krishna? Okay, can you say Krishna until what? Until Alos HaShachar? Can you say Krishna until Chatzos? Can you say Krishna until Baal Chos, right? Good. Out of that machlokas, how many things are agreed upon by everybody? All tonight, the laws of Mircham, everybody agrees to what? Everyone agrees there's a mitzvah to say Shema. Right? Good. Everyone agrees how many pashas of Shema are there?
Three
pashas. Everyone agrees you have to say Shema at night. Okay, everybody agrees the halachic night begins when? Everybody agrees the halachic night ends when? Alos Hashachar. So far so good. Right? Not bad. Okay? Everyone agrees that the word that's going to be kaveya when you say Kriyashma is which magic word? Bishachbacha. Six things everybody agrees to. On the seventh point, they're arguing. What are they arguing? What does it mean? They're arguing about a technical definition of the word Bishachbacha. What does it mean when you're sleeping? Does when you're sleeping mean when you're sleeping? Or does when you're sleeping means when you go to sleep? That's the machlokes. Rabbi Elazar says it means when you go to sleep, and therefore people generally go to sleep before 10 o'clock, normal people, not today's world, post Thomas Edison. The old days people went to sleep already by 10 o'clock. So according to Rabbi Elazar, you must say Kriya Shema at a time when people are going to sleep. And according to the Chum and Rabbi Gamliel, B'shach B'cham means at a time when people are sleeping, and therefore you can say it the whole night. And the Chum just said, we made it a gazer, we should say it before Chatzal, so we shouldn't forget. Right? So far so good. Out of that machlokas, the first machlokas is just six nekudas they agree upon, one thing they disagree upon. Give me another one. No machlokas. No one. Any other sugas in all shas? Smaller size for an esrog. Okay, should we take that? Good. Smaller size for an esrog. Everyone's masking. Okay. Everybody agrees that what? That you have to take an esrog. Okay. Everyone agrees when you take an esrog. 15th day of Tishrei. Everyone agrees you take it in the day, not in the night. Everyone agrees there's a mitzvah of dalet minim. Everyone agrees that if you don't have all four minim, you're not going to be yotze. Everybody agrees that only men have to take dalet minim. Women don't have to take dalet minim. Okay, how many more of those should I? 6 points that everybody agrees to. One nekuda. How small does the esrog have to be? Okay, give one more just to highlight it. That's it. That was machlokes.
Whether or not an owl can bathe in hot or cold water.
Hot or cold water. Let's leave out of analysis there. Abundantly, it's more complicated. Another machlokes on the level of their eyes.
You remember it says when Yom Kippur was?
When Yom Kippur was. Okay, there was machlokes, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, right? Which day was Rosh Hashanah really in effect, which was would affect when Yom Kippur was? Good. Everyone agrees Yom Kippur is on the 10th of Tishrei. Everybody agrees what he's supposed to do in Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to do malacha. Everybody agrees you're not allowed to eat in Yom Kippur. Everyone agrees you're not allowed to drink in Yom Kippur. Everyone agrees you're not allowed to, wash in Yom Kippur. All these surim, everybody agrees to. Everybody agrees there's a mitzvah Kiddush HaChodesh, and everybody agrees that you need to aid them for Kiddush HaChodesh. Alright? So far so good. Everyone agrees that a month could be the 29 days or 30 days. Okay? So you have about 8 to 10 different things that were absolutely given. And now you had a quirk of a machlokes. Well, the moon appears this way and then it appears another way. Is that good? Is that no good? That was the machlokes. You go through kol hashas, kol atarkul like this. You'll come to the realization that machlokesim were on the details of the details. So let's go back to the first machlokes now, of smicha and karbanos. Do you lean on the animal in yantav or not? Everyone agrees there's a mitzvah of smicha during the week. Everyone agrees what the Yom Tovim are. Everyone agrees not allowed to malach on Yom Tov. Everyone agrees there's a dimid rabbi not allowed to lead on animals on Yom Tov. Now we have a technical machlokes. What do you do? On the one hand, there's a mitzvah of smicha. On the other hand, there's a mitzvah of rabban of doing of smicha and behemoth on Yom Tov. What do you do? So this was the unresolved machlokes. So people sometimes think that the Tanaim, the Amoraim, the Mishkanim, they're arguing about the Kari Amuda, they're arguing about the basics. That's like 15 million different religions. So how could any of this be true if everyone's saying different things? The answer is that's absurd. It's a totally incorrect perception of the role of machlokes. That it's the same religion, it's the same Torah. It's nearer to Shtei Torahs, the Gemara says. Sometimes, you know, you see people doing different things, it looks like they're doing Torahs. But if you just look a little bit deeper, you realize, of course, it's the same Torah. So I'll tell you, you know, you see this very often in today's world also. Sometimes when you can look around and you see so many people have different minhagim, different nusach, davenings, and they look different, they dress different. You think it's Chas v'Shalom, two different, 15 different religions. Then you have to look a little bit past the chitzonius, look to the primius, that's fine. So I tell you, I had this course this past Shabbos, so I went with my kids to one of my wife's family, my wife's aunt and uncle, who spied them. So we had a fascinating Shabbos there. So it was an eye-opener for my kids to see that, you know, things were different. There were definitely some things that were different, no question about it. So the first thing, the negative Shalom Aleichem was different. And then when they made Kiddush, it's Baruch Priya Geffen instead of Baruch Priya Gofen. So my son got all excited. How come he said Geffen? He made a mistake. It's supposed to be Gofen. I said, it's not a mistake. Relax. Don't worry. So the chol was a little bit different, and the kugel was a little bit different, and the kvodim was a little bit different. But if you think about it, whoa, it's the same Shabbos, it's the same Lamed Tes Malachos. I don't cook, they don't cook. I make Kiddush, they make Kiddush. I make a multi, they make a multi. We do the mamish the same thing. So he said Geffen and I said Goffen. And the schus this was on Shabbos, so I went to, it was in Hanok, so we went to Rav Avadia Yosef for Mitzvah Shabbos. So I heard Abdullah from Rav Avadia Yosef. It's close to Mamash, it was Yaitz Abdullah, Mitzvah Shabbos from Rav Avadia. So was it the exact same Abdullah that I'm used to? So the Hilel Kiddush was, he was very, very different. About 25 different psukim instead of the regular introduction. But in terms of the text of Abdullah, it was a bar to Goffin or Geffen. It was a bar, read it some, it's Bibson. It was a bar to Oriyash. It was a Mavd, it was the same Kaddish Lechob, another Chayshach, Bain, Yamashim. It's the same thing. Rav Avadia Yosef has a very, very different background than myself. My family comes from Eastern Europe. Rav Avadia's family comes from Egypt. I said, we've traveled different paths over the years, and yet we are the same Torah. It's Mavish, the same Torah. It's the exact same Torah. And nuance of the. He wears a turban, I wear a hat. Those are neat details, those are nuances, those are details, should be details. But in terms of the bulk of the Torah, it's mamish, mamish, the same Torah, no question about it. So some of these details started to crop up in the days of Bayashani. And the Gemara says, although they started in the days of Yossi ben Yoez and Yossi ben Yochanan, the first Machlokes, they reached the point of much more seriousness, much more, much clearer as differences. But the Gemara says it's actually Nirka Beis Toros in the days of the Tamidei Shammai and Hillel. Now, Shammai and Hillel were two figures who entered onto the scene historically in the days towards the end of Bayashani, who really, in a sense, transformed and became the pillars of the next generations of Talmidim. So Shammai and Hillel didn't enter into Jewish history in a vacuum. They were the next generation after Shammai v'Avtalion, I mentioned a little bit this evening. Shammai v'Avtalion were two fascinating individuals who were descendants of Geirim, who reached the ultimate level in terms of the Nesiim. They became the leaders of the Jewish people. And their Talmidim took over after them. So Hillel, actually, as I mentioned before, I introduced him a while. So not only did Hillel came from quite a humble background, nobody knew who he was. The Gemara tells a fascinating story in the beginning of the sixth parak of Pesachim, that one year Pesach fell out on Shabbos, and they didn't know whether you bring the Korban Pesach or not. You know, we know when our Pesach falls out on Shabbos, a lot of strange halachas. So they didn't remember the last time, it was 25 years before, they didn't remember whether you bring the Korban Pesach. So the people who were in charge of Klal Yisrael then were known as the Bnei Beseira, the sons of Beseira. They were the Tamei Chacham, they were the leaders of the Jewish people. They were the Nesiim. And the Shaila came to them, what do you do? Do you off the garment? Nobody could remember. They couldn't look up the Mishnah Berurah, there was nothing was written, everything was about that. The Mamish couldn't remember what the story was. So Hillel happened to be there, and he was a nobody, nobody knew who he was. He had come from Babylonia. And generally speaking, the level of learning in Babel at that time is not on par as the learning in Eretz Yisrael. Hillel comes from Babel and he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he says that he tells the Bnei Beseira that he had been in Eretz Yisrael years earlier when he was younger, and he had learned by Shmaya v'Avtalion, and he remembers as a young boy that he had a tradition from Shmaya v'Avtalion that the Korban Pesach is in fact offered on Shabbos, and he proved it with Zer Shavva and Adrasha, all singing in the sixth Mech Pesach. He proved to the Bnei Beseira that is the halacha. When the Bnei Beseira realized that he had in effect knew more than they did, he had a clearer Messiah than they did, so how do you think they felt to him? How do you think most people would react to that? A little annoyed, right? Younger upstarts, you know, you're going to tell us what to do. Who knows what they did?
They gave him the
Nesiyas. The Gemara says that they resigned and they put him to become the, they let him become the Nasi. You see an unbelievable, the anivos, the amitas of the truth, of sincerity of the B'nai Pseira, that they realized that, that there was someone who was greater than them and that was okay. You see not only the greatness of the B'nai Pseira, of the B'nai Pseira, but you see the godless in terms of Torah, that unfortunately in certain systems there's a concept of nepotism. You know, it all depends on you know, who you know and where you come from and your family, and you can't get to the top unless you have the right family connections. But Baruch Hashem, in the world of Torah, it's not supposed to be that way. Now, again, you know, is it the perfect world that we live in? It's not the perfect world that we live in. But the way the world of Torah is supposed to be, and the way it has been in many, many situations, is that it doesn't matter who you know, and it doesn't matter where you come from, it doesn't matter your yichus, it matters one thing, how much Torah you learn. If you become a Talmid Chacham, if you're diligent, you're a Maspin, you grow in terms of your own learning, you can go to the top. You can mamish, you can become the Nasi, the Rosh Hashiva, you can become anything if you put your head and your heart to it. Yeah, does it mean that we live in a perfect world and that's always what happens? I can't say that. But in terms of, everybody agrees that that's what Torah is supposed to be. Torah is not supposed to be something that you rest on somebody else's laurels. Each person has the ability to grow, to become the Talmid Chacham, the Gadol HaDor. The Gemara tells us that even a mamzer comes from, unfortunately, the lowest of the lowest yichos, mamzer Talmid Chacham kodem b'kohen gadol am ha'aretz. If you have a toss-up between the kohen gadol and am ha'aretz, and then mamzer Talmid Chacham, the mamzer comes first. He gets kedima, he gets the cover first, because he's the Talmid Chacham, the Talmid Chacham always comes first. The Gemara tells us in the Sefer Yuma that on Yom Kippur, when the kohen gadol would leave the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so he was the height of his year, so people would escort the kohen gadol home. So one year they were escorting the kohen gadol home, and then Shema Yavtalyon happened to appear in the Beis HaMikdash. So everybody left the kohen gadol and went to go escort Shema Yavtalyon, because they were the Talmid Chachamim. So the Gemara says, even though they were descendants of Gerim, they had a significantly less yichus than the kohen gadol, who was the highest level of yichus. It doesn't matter. The Gemara says, Yikarim Pnimim, the Torah is dearer than diamonds. So the word Pnimim is a play on the word. Pnimim means diamond, means pearls. So Pnimim is a Lashon Pnim. Lefnai Lefnim, the Kohen Gadol is the one who serves in the Beis HaMikdash in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Says the Gemara, the Torah is Yikarim El Kohen Gadol Nichas Lefnai Lefnim. So the Torah has the ability to elevate a person that they deserve more covered than the Kohen Gadol himself. So again, so these individuals, Hillel and Shami and Hillel, took over and each established their own Beis Medrash, and then many, many Talmidim. The Gemara tells us that there were very, very few machloks in between Hillel and Shammai themselves. Anyone knows how many?
Just
between seven,
six. Hillel and Shammai, either three or four. It's machlokes for Shammai, so machlokes, whether there were three or four, very, very few machlokes. Anyone knows what they were? Very, very tactical details, which really highlights the point I said before. There's a machlokas in the first Mishnah Maseches Nida, when a woman becomes a Nida, this should become a Nida retroactively, not retroactively, enough to mean for kotchim in here. Everybody agrees there's a din of Nida, and everyone agrees how a woman becomes a Nida, and everyone agrees to the din of Truman, kotchim, and kulin. It's a quirk of a shayla, but the Rabbanan, what do you do if she becomes a Nida now? Do you assume she probably was bleeding yesterday, we didn't see it? So a very, very tactical detail. Then there was machlokes in Uchas Chala, and there was machlokes in Uchas Megvos. So each one of the machlokes was not a major, major point in terms of these areas of halacha. They were a technical detail in terms of these halachas. So again, so these the days of Hillel and Shammai, there were very, very few machlokes. But in the days immediately post Hillel and Shammai, that's when Rabsa Machlokes Bisrael. The Gemara says that the Tamidi Hillel and Shammai lo shimshu kol tzarchan, that they didn't serve their Rebbeim well enough, and that's when Machlokes began to set in. So the Rambam explains what that means is that Hillel and Shammai, they were, their level of learning was so great that they pretty much saw eye to eye in everything. Few nuances of things that they disagreed on, but they had such clear vision, they were able to come to the same conclusion as one another. The Talmidim were not quite on that level, so then each one started to see things through their own glasses, through their own different nuance in terms of the Mesorah. Now again, the Rambam reiterates what we've said already many times. It doesn't mean that there was machlokas about the Halacha Moshe Mesinai, or about the Purushim Kabbalah Mesinai. The machlokas was primarily in the realm of drushas, or in the realm of making new dinim derabbanan, or interpreting for existing dinim derabbanan. So rubs and machlokas b'Yisrael, there were many, many machlokasim, and unfortunately what happened was is that many of the machlokasim were not able to be resolved. at least for long periods of time. Finally, the Gemara concludes that whenever you have machlokas b'shama and b'silel, so the halacha follows b'silel. We always follow b'silel with very, very few exceptions, a half a dozen exceptions, but generally speaking, the halacha is like b'silel. Why do we follow b'silel? Not because of making them, not necessarily, b'silel not always making them. Many times b'silel and machlokas also. No. We shouldn't always say b'silel was making. It's not true. There are many times I make them, but they were machlokas also. So why is that we follow Bissil? The Gemara gives two reasons. First of all, they were the Rav, they were the majority, the Rav Mahatos. And second of all, there was a bas kol, there was a voice that came out from heaven that said, Allah ke Bissil. Now, that already opens a very, very serious problem for us.
What? Don't we not
possibly? Oh, Yimashkichim a bas kol.
And also,
so,
isn't there something like Midi Shammai and Mashiach?
Very good. So there's a sugya, a very famous sugya of Mitzi in the fourth parak, but there was a machlokas to Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham about a very technical issue in terms of the chastum of the Tahara, that Rabbi Eliezer held a certain thing was tar, and the Chacham said a certain thing was tameh. And Rabbi Eliezer argued with the Chachamim, and he said that I'm going to prove to you that I'm right, because if I'm right, let the stream prove that I'm right, and the stream outside the Beis Medrash went the other way. And then he said, let the pillars of the Beis Medrash prove that I'm right, the pillars started to lean, and the Beis Medrash will spell down. Fourth paragraph of Rabbi Eliezer. And then the Chacham said, no, sorry, can't bring any riots. Then Rabbi Eliezer said, let a voice come out from heaven that I'm right, and Kachav, a voice came out from heaven. And the Chachamim said, Rabbi Shua gets up and he says, Lo b'shamayimi, we have a tradition that we don't paskin shalos based on supernatural occurrences. Shalos are paskin by boss of Adam in the Sanhedrin, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer is outvoted, and we do not follow you, Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara then tells us the postscript to the story that Rabbi Nassan met Eliyahu HaNavi and asked him, what was the Kadosh Baruch Hu saying at that moment? We were afraid the Kadosh Baruch Hu was angry, we weren't listening to the Baskel. So the Gemara tells us that Eliyahu HaNavi told him that the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Natzchuni Banai and Tzchuni Banai. The Kadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyahu said, my children won. It means they did the right thing. That's what I wanted them to do. I wanted them not to listen to the Baskel. I wanted them to pass the Echirat Mahatas. So we have a rule, Loba Shemaimi. So why do we pass it like they said before? So Tosfos points out that this Baskel was very different than the Baskel of Rabbi Eliezer. In the case of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer was the yachid, Rabbi Eliezer was the individual, so we shouldn't baskel like Kibach HaRam HaFaz, we always follow the majority. So the baskel is going to come and change the pre-existing halachas. You know what I do? The baskel has no koch to change what the halacha should be. In the baskel of Beis Hillel, that was what's supposed to do. It's supposed to follow Beis Hillel because they were the Rove anyway. So a baskel doesn't have the ability to change the halacha, but a baskel could say, okay, you're doing the right thing. It means we're following anyway. So the ma'aseh, whatever the reason is, we follow Beis Hillel. As a general, we follow Beis Hillel, with an exception to a couple, half a dozen cases that the Tanoim decided were exceptions to the rule for whatever reason, but we basically follow Beis Hillel.
If Beis Hillel was the Rove, then why are there six times?
Also, it could be that in later generations, the Rove held that in later Tanoim said that in this particular case, Misham was right, so that became the new Rove.
There's something that we are going to listen to Misham, I like Mashiach.
Yeah, so that's a very, that particular tradition does not appear in the Gemara itself. It's unclear exactly what that's all about, what the promise of that statement does. So we're going to leave that out. The Gemara doesn't mention that explicitly at all. So we're talking, we're still in Vaisheni, we have not yet come to the time of the Churban. We're still in the days of Vaishami and Beis Hillel, and some of the Tamidim of Hillel. Anyone know two famous Tamidim, two very, very famous Tamidim who had?
Rabbi Yochanan
Zakkai and
Yonasan
Ben Aziel. Those are two of the famous ones. Yeah, yeah. Many other Tamidim, those are the two famous ones that we know of. So open Beis Hashem next year will continue from the Tekufa. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was really the bridge between the pre-Churban and the post-Churban, and see how that affected the Tashuah.